I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. And with me on the podcast this week is John Lustria.
Yeah. Ah, people go crazy.
And I think I said that because, you know, I do podcasts via Skype. Well, maybe you don't know. I do podcasts via Skype. Not always with the video on, but I have the video on today because it's my son, and he was playing air guitar along with the theme. Anyway, so it made me want to say, and this is John Lustria.
Ah, okay, I see. Yes.
Yeah, I know. And of course, since he's my son, he already thinks I'm weird. The rest of you, I don't know if you've made that determination yet, but anyway, welcome to Faith Conversations.
Ah, thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah.
It's always fun to be on the podcast.
I know. And I tell them often, and actually I said to you, I tell people often you're my critiquer. And so maybe let's talk some podcast critique. And you said, I know you
I know you tell them that because I listen all the time.
Which I think is so funny because you didn't listen when I was on radio, but you listened to the podcast.
No, I did not listen when you had your own radio show for a couple of reasons. One, I was younger.
Yeah.
But B, I don't know if I was usually the intended audience.
True. That's probably
being
a big part of it.
You know, at my oldest, you know, like a 16, 18-year-old guy.
That's true. It didn't really, it was geared primarily toward women.
This is more a wider audience base in terms of age and gender and
topic content, really.
And topically, too.
Yeah, so cool. Well, hey, since you were on the podcast with me last, let's see, I think we did a podcast, you and I and Melinda, we talked back in early June, May, early June, something like that. Anyway, you've gotten married since then. And I've forgotten to mention that. Yeah, I see the ring. I forgotten to mention that on the podcast. Mike and I took a big, epic road trip, 5 weeks. That was going to be like 7 weeks, but we got tired of living out of a suitcase and came home early. But the beginning of that trek was to go to and be a part of your wedding. So you're married. Talk about the wedding and marriage.
Oh, the wedding was just wonderful. Couldn't have asked for a better day. It was so wonderful looking out at all the people who were there and who I knew had traveled great and small distances to be there, you guys included. And it was just, it was so nice. And the weather was perfect. The reception was kind of outdoor. It's perfect weather, beautiful time. It was great. And now Sarah and I are living in our apartment in Charlestown, West Virginia. We just went to the farmer's market, loaded up on some delicious cheese. Which we do basically every week.
Oh, I didn't know they sold cheese at your farmer's market. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. It's all goat cheese, I think.
I was waiting for you to say delicious vegetables. That's usually what people go to farmer's market for, and the word cheese came out.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you're married to Sarah, cheese is an ever-present quantity. She loves cheese.
Excellent. All right.
And I do, too. So, anyway, things are good so far.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, what was a highlight of the wedding day? I mean, was it that standing out and looking at all the people gathered, or?
That's, like, not a fair question.
It's not.
I mean,
it's not.
Literally all of it.
All of it. Okay, so maybe I just say my highlight. I'll say a highlight, because I've talked to people about this. Do you know what I'm going to say?
Yes, I do, and it's going to be nice and probably a little embarrassing, but ultimately good.
The best part was when you saw Sarah just about to come down the aisle. What happened?
I started crying.
Like, not just crying, I mean, like, sobbing practically. Like, tears just screaming.
I was quite close to crying, just when I saw everyone who was there. Like, the wedding day was, like, my ideal day in all sorts of ways, because one of the things I love the most is bringing people together, and it was such a joy to see people getting to know other people that, like, would never, ever have met if they basically hadn't come to wedding.
Hadn't known you and Sarah. Exactly.
And just that, I loved the idea that, you know, the love that Sarah and I had was creating other little beginnings of love with other people. I mean, maybe not romantic love, but friendships all that. And so I probably wasn't thinking that quite that consciously, but that was the ideas and the milieu that was swimming through my head. And I knew when I saw the first bridesmaid start to walk down the aisle and I started to tear up, I knew I didn't really have a chance when I when I saw Sarah, and she looked so beautiful, and it was just so good, and just the goodness of the day washed over me, and I just couldn't handle it.
I love it. Well, and so hence your tears caused me to cry as a good mom of the groom, and it was great. I had to read a couple verses of scripture right after that point. And I'd never thought to carry a Kleenex up there to the podium with me, and so I'm wiping my nose with my hand. It's really lovely, a lovely scene. I'm sniffing between every phrase.
I think everyone that was involved with the wedding remembers that most of all.
Oh, of course they do, yes. That's hilarious. Thankfully, only two verses and I was done. I'm good. Yeah. But that was my highlight, I think, watching that. And then mother-son dance at the reception. That was fun, but different than I thought.
Yeah.
I didn't cry.
No, you didn't. I didn't either.
I think we were all cried out at that point.
Yes, I would probably were.
Yeah.
And then the big country roads singing circle at the end.
Well, I have to tell people, so here's, you know, this wedding's in West Virginia, and so Country Roads actually is the official song of the state of West Virginia. It was
one of three, actually.
Okay, so I thought it was voted in as the official, but there are three, but it's got to be the most beloved. So it showed up a couple of times at your reception. The DJ played it, and when it starts playing in West Virginia, everyone stops what they're doing and they start to sing. And there's people made this big circle on the dance floor and just kind of swayed and sang. It was great.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. So, all right, wedding. Moving on. Let's move on to career, because people have known you. You know, that you've been in school studying history, undergrad, and then also studying public history at the master's level at University of South Carolina. So you finished and got that degree in end of May. And you were job searching, and I don't think I've told anyone on the podcast if you found a job. Mike, of course, his big line was, you'll be waiting tables. And every time he'd say it, I'm like, don't say that. And you're not waiting tables.
No, I'm not. I work at the National Museum of Civil War Medicine in Frederick, Maryland. Come visit, say hello. It's great.
Follow on Facebook.
Oh, yes. Follow our Facebook page, National Museum of Civil War Medicine, on Facebook. I've been doing a series of blog posts based on a set of letters that only the museum is in possession of. Literally, no one has ever read these letters before. That's not strictly true, but very few people ever have even seen these. And so the blog posts that I'm writing is the first basically coherent narrative based on these letters about the life of this nurse. Her name was Clara Jones. And if you want to learn more about Clara Jones, read the blogs. They're very good.
And
there's three currently, and there's a fourth and final one on the way.
Okay, very good. And they can find these at the blog. I mean, I know they're reposted on the Facebook page.
If you go to civilwarmed.org.
Okay, civilwarmed.org.
Navigate your way to the blog, you'll find it. Okay. Or if you just search Claire Jones, she'll come up.
Okay, all right. Or, you know, like the Facebook page. That works too.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So that's what you're up to. Thought people might be interested in that. So now let's move on to other topics here on the podcast. You and I talk with some frequency, you know, about what we're reading, what we're thinking. We listen to a couple of the same podcasts, and so sometimes we'll discuss things from those. But where do you want to go today? You've been reading a book. I would like to touch on this book, because maybe I'll post have that up on my homepage at anitalustria.com, which, just a second before we get into that book, let me do a little quick commercial.
Yes, your commercial.
Because I've not been doing a good job at doing the commercial. And yes. So anyway, you can support the Faith Conversations podcast in a couple of ways. You can support financially. You can do it via PayPal or by sending a check through good old U.S. mail.
Mom, where can people send this check?
Well, they can, let me start with PayPal. They can give to PayPal with this email address, producer@anitalustria.com. Lustria has an EA on the end. If you've not ever seen it in print, sometimes people don't know that. So producer@anitalustria.com, that's the email you use to give on PayPal. If you want to mail in a check, you can send it to 8 White Oak Terrace, two words there, well, three really, White Oak Terrace, 8 White Oak Terrace, Sarasota, Florida, and the zip is 34237. Again, the zip 34237. All right, commercial done. So talk about this book that you're currently reading, because it's, I'm posting it at the homepage at anitalustria.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been very, very enjoyable so far. And we may talk more about it in a separate podcast with our mutual friend, Lori Neff.
Yes, who has purchased the book also.
Yeah, so the book is titled God Was in This Place and I Did Not Know, Finding Self, Spirituality, and Ultimate Meaning. So there's a subtitle for you. It's by Lawrence Kushner, who's a Jewish rabbi, and it's an examination of the same verse. How many chapters are there?
I think there are seven chapters.
Seven chapters, and it looks at the same verse, which is... The verse is the title of the book, God Was in This Place and I Did Not Know. And each chapter is a different interpretation of the same verse. So it's in reference to the whole Jacob's Ladder storyline. It's Genesis 28:16. And basically after Jacob has the dream where the angels are going up and down the ladder and, whenever he wakes up, I think he's going to his uncle Laban's place where the whole Rachel and Leah business happens. So he wakes up from the dream and then he says, surely God was in this place and I did not know. And it's been, I'm not done yet. I'm about halfway through. I've read four chapters so far and it's really good. And each of the interpretations, not only are they really fascinating interpretations, the explanation of them by Lawrence Kushner is... It's pretty cerebral, but it's in an accessible sort of way, and I've really been enjoying it, and it's kind of stretched me and caused me to think some interesting thoughts.
Well, and let me just maybe add or ask you some questions about the book, because you're digging into it first. I've not started reading it, but I think what's interesting is, this is a typical way that... people in the Jewish faith would look at texts, rabbis certainly, multiple interpretations. Where you and I come from a stream of evangelicalism, I talked a little bit with Melinda about this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week, where we might look at a text and go, no, there's this one meaning. And though you hear messages on different texts and different people come up with different meaning, but it just seems more core and key to the Jewish faith to this whole idea of midrash.
There's not a, at least my impression with Judaism is that, like in Christianity, there's multiple interpretations of a text, but the concern, or at least in Judaism, there's not a concern to feel to reconcile these interpretations. There's not much of a concern of these seven different interpretations of the same verse existing beside each other, and that's just fine.
Which is fascinating to me, and I know I feel that way and do that with some passages, but maybe it's those kind of doctrinal type passages that where I've grown up, and it's been said to me, no, there's only one interpretation of that kind of passage that's okay, where that would not necessarily be the case with in the Jewish faith and with this practice of midrash, which is, do you have a good explanation of midrash?
Well, just to briefly, before I talk about that, is what you're saying, a thought that I just had about why There's a fixation on perhaps a right interpretation is that a lot of, you know, biblical text is so story-based. And in the traditional kind of modern understanding of what history is and what a story is, it's all supposed to make sense and be logical, and especially if it really happened, presumably things happened in a very specific order, and like, you know, either thing A happened this way or it didn't. And so the way that we kind of think about how the stories happened, especially if they involve people doing and saying things, it's like, well, either they said this or they didn't, but I guess interpretation comes down to maybe what they meant when they said whatever. I don't know, this is just something that popped in my head.
Sure.
And I'm certainly no expert when it comes to Midrash, but from my understanding of it, is it's a Jewish rabbinical practice where they sort of theorize conversations that might have taken place between characters in the Bible.
So I would call,
for example,
it,
most of the...
Let me just say, I'll just interject mm-hmm. this. I would call it, in Christian circles, we would call that using our sacred imagination. That would be our term for it.
Well, right. So just kind of using the text as a jumping off point, and thinking, you know, what sort of emotions might these characters have been feeling? What other scenes might that have called forth? Things like this.
Okay.
And so most of the chapters in this book involve Jacob having, you know, a series of conversations with who I presume are, you know, kind of somewhat famous rabbis. Or teachers. The names aren't really recognizable to me because I'm not really from that tradition, but he's talking about these people like I should know who they are, and I don't. So
sure, I get that. So that's helpful. Well, that lets us know a little bit more about the book, and it's posted at on the homepage, anitalustria.com. It'll be in the show notes as well. So I know one of the things you wanted to talk about today was spiritual practices, and I am wondering what sort of put you on the path of spiritual practices. I mean, I know you've heard me talk about them off and on through the years, but I think there's something else probably that fed into this.
Oh, absolutely. It's a podcast I've been listening to for a while now. It's called Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, which is a concept I've been fascinated by. So it's organized by some Harvard Divinity School students. And one of them, their master's thesis or something like this, was treating secular texts as sacred. And the whole idea that if you apply yourself with rigor and really kind of take a secular text sacred, wondering what kind of beautiful things that then might call us to.
Okay.
Things like, which I really appreciated that and enjoyed that framework. And so then this lady and this other guy were, you know, having a conversation, you know, how can we, you know, what if we did a podcast about this? And they figured that Harry Potter was a widely recognizable enough thing. And then they start doing it, and each week they go through a chapter, and they do a variety of things. But one of the things they do every week is they do a spiritual practice. And I've learned quite a few spiritual practices, for some that were familiar to me, and there were some that were all new to me that I've enjoyed quite a bit.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And I'm thinking that you probably have to be thoughtful about choosing the text you're going to do it with. You can't just do it with any book, really. It's got to have...
Potentially, although with Lectio Divina, when they do that, they just flip to a random point in the chapter. And again, this is the whole bit where, you know, kind of taking the text seriously, it's, and this might be part of the origin of Lectio Divina, but it's not so much that the text needs to be particularly rich, it's that you need to find the meaning in whatever, you know, it is you're working or dealing with. Now, potentially that can lead, you know, there's some things that don't really have much meaning, but I've been amazed at some of the stuff that they've been able to do.
Well, but I'm thinking, I mean, I'm a believer that there's a lot of underlying spiritual meaning in the Harry Potter series. But I'm thinking of other books
I see what you
mean. Yeah, where, I mean, you have to be thoughtful about what kind of book you choose to warrant doing, bringing a Lectio Divina to it or other spiritual practices. Some books, it wouldn't work. That's what I'm meaning. So in light of that, what are you interested in trying? Like picking a passage?
Oh, we could do any number of things.
Scriptural passage or other?
We may as well do the Bible. I mean, that's a familiar enough thing.
All right. I'm pulling out my Bible. And actually, I'm pulling out my Bible app because I've got my phone right here. And I wonder.
I've got the trusty.
You got the physical book there.
The real thing.
Yeah. Okay. That's all right. I've got the Message. I don't know what you've got in front of you.
Well, yeah, I was thinking we should do something from the Gospels in the Message translation. Okay.
Well, Mike and I are reading through Matthew, actually not together, but and I wonder.
Something that I think might be kind of fun to do. Is called Florilegium.
What's that?
So it's where you go through a text, and we can make the span of what we're looking at as bigger. Probably bigger is better. But where you go through and you pick out what are called little sparklets. It's basically like a little sentence or a phrase.
Okay.
And ideally they shouldn't. So each of us would pick two, and then we would have the four of them go together, and we see what they sound like together, because the idea is we're taking them out of the context. And the idea behind Florilegium is that when bits of sacred text are put together that didn't go together in the flow of the text, that there's something new that you can learn. And when they do it on the podcast, they change the order around, they do all kinds of things, they tweak it and manipulate it. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So
here, let me pull something up here.
Okay.
Just a little, make sure I want to do something different that maybe you haven't done before.
Okay. That sounds good. So we're going to do this spiritual practice that John mentioned called, if I'm getting it right, Florilegium.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've never heard of this before.
So this is something I learned on the Harry Potter and the Sacred Text podcast.
Okay, so he and I have picked our two verses from...
And this can be done with as many or as few verses as people like. And by the way, this is something that a lot of people probably do already that they don't recognize doing. When people have their favorite memory verses or what have you, basically. So the idea is that you're supposed to pick out what are called sparklets, basically, or bits of the text that really sparkle at you.
Which is not unlike Lectio Divina, too. You know.
What makes it different from Lectio Divina is that you're bringing these pieces of text that are not in conversation with each other in a kind of regular reading of text, bringing them into conversation with each other. And we'll see... what they call to mind.
We'll see how they converse.
No idea what'll happen. That's part of the fun.
Okay, cool. So where do we go? Do I start? Do you start?
Yeah, go ahead and read yours, and then I'll read mine.
All right. So my first verse is Matthew 5:4, and I'm reading out of the Message here. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. I mean, I just kind of grabbed that out of the blue, honestly. That's powerful. All right, and then should I go to the next one?
Yep, just go right to the next one.
All right, I'm since I'm online here, I have to leap to the next one, which is Luke 12, verse 22, and I really did kind of pick this out of the blue. Here it is. He continued this subject with his disciples. Don't fuss about what's on the table at mealtimes or if the clothes in your closet are in fashion.
And then my two verses, Luke 15:31. His father said, "Son, you don't understand. You're with me all the time, and everything that is mine is yours." And then to flip over to the other verse, John 18:1, which is very random. Jesus, having prayed this prayer, left with his disciples and crossed over the brook Kidron at a place where there was a garden. He and his disciples entered it.
Okay.
So.
Now what?
Now, basically, we'll go through each verse and just sort of say literally what's going on here in the flow of the text. So the Luke verse that I picked out, his father said, "Son, you don't understand. You're with me all the time. And everything that is mine is yours," comes at the end of the story of the prodigal son.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll just presume people are familiar with. And it's the kind of last big, you know, humdinger that the father says to, I believe, the older son who's being bitter about not joining in the party he's thrown for the disobedient younger son who has returned home.
Yes.
And then the verse in John, I think it's basically right as they're going into the Garden of Gethsemane. It's mm-hmm. after Jesus has given this long, multi-chapter message to his disciples about how they shouldn't be afraid and that he's with them always and this whole deal.
All right, and my verse in Matthew 5:4, it's part of the Sermon on the Mount. You know, mm-hmm. it's when there was this crowd, a big crowd up on the hillside, you know, disciples and people apprenticed to him, all kind, you know, along with the larger crowd. And they all sat down and he started to teach. And this is one of the Beatitudes. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. And so that's the context of that particular verse. And then my other verse, which comes from Luke chapter 12, verse 22. This is, I gotta see what the context of this is. Jesus is talking about parables, giving stories, and he's talking about the greedy farmer, and you kind of come to the end of this, and he says, continues kind of the subject, the topic with disciples, don't fuss about what's on the table at mealtimes, or if the clothes in your closet are in fashion.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's the series of contexts here. Now, what comes to mind hearing these four passages together that maybe we wouldn't otherwise know? One thing that jumped out at me right away was the read your Matthew verse again.
Oh, okay. I was thinking the Luke verse. Luke verse and your... read my Luke verse.
Mm-hmm. No, your verse in Matthew.
I mean my Matthew verse. Okay, hold on. I got to get the right one. So it's Matthew 5:4. All right.
This is why
I know.
Text
That's
better.
Right. Smart. Yes. The truth. All right. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you.
Mm-hmm. And then. And which I think is especially poignant when it's brought into conversation with the prodigal son
mm-hmm.
story, because as his father said, "Son, you don't understand. You're with me all the time. Everything that is mine is yours." The whole idea that the father had lost something that was most dear to him, which is to say his son, and that was probably. And I know the father's supposed to represent God in this story, but if we're you know, thinking of it as, you know, a regular dad who thought his son had just sort of gone off.
Right.
That was probably a really big moment for him, and it maybe changed the way he looked at his son that had stayed with him.
Mm-hmm.
And really kind of changed his perspective on things like that.
Yeah, and potentially he was interacting with God about all of this as well and changed his perspective there. Mm-hmm. relationally as well, which, I mean, obviously often happens to us as we read that story. I like that. All right. So I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. Which that's
the point.
I like that because it makes me think usually when I hear the parable of the prodigal son, you know, I think of the father so intensely as a stand in for God, but this is making me think of him more as like a regular human being that, mm-hmm. you know, feels these sort of emotions and that, you know, if you ever find yourself in a situation kind of like this where you lose something really precious, that this is a way that you should respond and you should expect the way you think about things to really change.
All right. So now read your... So that was your Luke 15 and my Matthew 5. Read John 18:1, and then I'll read my Luke 12:22.
Sure. Jesus, having prayed this prayer, left with his disciples and crossed over the brook Kidron at a place where there was a garden. He and his disciples entered it.
He continued the subject with his disciples. Don't fuss about what's on the table at mealtimes or if the clothes in your closet are in fashion.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
What's that make you think of?
Well, this is, as you read both of your verses, I was thinking more when I read this one about the prodigal son again. Mm-hmm. You know, what's really important, right? What's really important? You know, the prodigal son thought, I want my money and I want to get out of Dodge and I want to spend it the way I want and I want to, you know, I don't want to be told what to do. And as I read this one, just, you know, it's not worth it. Don't forget what's, you know, fussing about what's on the table at mealtimes or if the clothes in your closet are in fashion. Of course, I know what the passage goes on to say, which I'm not supposed to probably be thinking about.
Well, no, we can think about it. I mean, it's all part of
because you know, it's more that your inner life, your relationships, relationship to God, relationship to others, knowing that you know God will provide in a way usually that we don't expect. But don't, you know, forget about that stuff that's more temporal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that certainly plays over into that prodigal son passage.
Right. Well, and to speak just a little bit to the John passage too. This is right before Jesus gets seized and they're going into the garden. And basically it's Jesus perhaps knows that these are some of his last few moments as a free person, and thinking about, you know, he's spending them with his friends, not doing anything extravagant.
Right.
They're just, you know, hanging out in a garden, basically.
Right.
That's the simple thing.
And he's embodying this verse. He's, you know, it doesn't matter what's on the table or the clothes in his closet, the fashion that he wears. I mean, that's the farthest thing from his mind.
Right. Jesus isn't concerned about, you know, what he's wearing when he gets apprehended or what, you know, which of his disciples is the coolest or whatever. This is something he's thinking about.
Well, so what I want to ask, so that's kind of modeling how this works. I'm also curious to ask a couple of other questions, but you've got more.
We're not done yet.
Okay.
And we could go on at length, you know, kind of switching these, moving these around and whatever else.
Okay.
So the main question that you ask, you know, after you go through, you know, what it's literally talking about and then what it makes you think, hearing them in conversation, then the big question to ask at the end, as with kind of at the end of most spiritual practices, is then, what are you feeling called to based on the interaction of the texts that you've heard?
Okay. So you're asking me that?
Well, I'll go ahead and start for one thing. The biggest thing that seems to bind all of these together is a matter of perspective and what you think about. And perhaps the central two verses are the two from Luke about, you know, the dad says to the kid, you know, everything I have is yours. You're with me all the time. You know, you don't understand. And then, you know, don't worry about what you have, you know, the clothing on your back and whatever. It's all about knowing kind of what's really important. And so one of the things I guess that this all would call me to is to think carefully about, you know, what I spend time either worrying over or thinking about or whatever, and how important I think it is on a scale of 1 to 10.
Well, and I would love for you, I don't know what version of scripture you got in front of you there, but would
the message currently.
Oh, is that what you read out of?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was wanting to know what Matthew 5:4 was, not in the message.
I also have the NIV in paper copy.
All right. I was thinking I actually could switch it probably to...
I got it.
All right, good.
Matthew 5:4.
Yes.
Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's very interesting.
Because this is, you know, you're blessed when you feel you've lost what's most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. Which I feel like that does also play into perspective. So blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. That, I mean, I think that's, this reading, you're blessed when you feel you've lost what's most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. I think that's also about perspective of what you hold most dear. Sometimes we grasp too tightly and and lose something and lose sight of, you know, the broader, bigger one who is most dear, who walks with us and, you know, does not want to crush us. You know, I think it's interesting.
Well, it makes me think of a wider definition of mourn, because when I just hear blessed are those who mourn, for they'll be comforted, it makes me think of blessed are those who somebody died and, you know, they'll be comforted. But the way it's put in the message, blessed are those who lose what's most dear, it, I think, puts a different spin on it. That's helpful for me, at least.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, yeah, at this stage of my life, the older I get, the more I think about that and can sometimes grasp a little too tightly and not live life as loosely, because it seems that the losses add up more and you can see them coming sometimes down the road, you know, if, prophetically speaking. I mean, not, you know, exactly. Anyway, so very interesting. So this is a bit of how you do the floor elegium.
And for you listening at home, a way that you can do this, you don't even necessarily need to do it with someone else, although that's probably the most fruitful way to do it. But in your daily either Bible reading, or maybe there's a book that you're really enjoying, be it fiction or nonfiction, and instead of underlining something, perhaps have a little notebook and just write your the sentences that really sparkle to you or pop out at you. And after you're done with the chapter or something, go back through and, you know, some people keep like a quote book. I mean, this is the same idea behind a quote book. So go back either after your Bible reading or whatever you're reading that you think might be interesting, and go through and see what you've written down. And you can do it with yourself if you want to do it like that, or you can do it with somebody else.
Well, and I was just going to say, I think for some who maybe, and I'll go back to say using the Bible as the text, because I want to talk to that person who is struggling to engage currently with Scripture. It's become dry, and you're just struggling to even open the pages. I think sometimes when we walk down the path of using various spiritual practices, it can help these passages, this living book, come more alive to us, because it, maybe it has become dead or our faith has become stale. And I think, to John's point, yeah, you can do this alone, but it'd be great to grab a friend and do something like this.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I already felt like, you know, John really knew what he was doing with this and had better insights, because I think I'm just sort of learning how this works. But this was a really great model, and I appreciated it. I'm much more used to doing Lectio Divina and with a single passage, but I like this because it makes you think in a different way, and so I really appreciate this.
Yeah, and specifically to the person who maybe you don't know how to engage with the text, starting doing this with either Psalms or Proverbs would be very easy, because there's much less context to each of the passages, since they're just sort of poems or, you know, wisdom sayings about things.
Okay, that's a good
that would be a good place
too.
To start.
Nice. Wow, I love this. I feel like I learned something today.
Well, good.
Yeah. Who knew? No, and I'll have to get the spelling of floor elegium. Never heard of it. Got to look that up and all that. But I'll have that at anitalustria.com if you just want to learn more or know more. And I'll post our verses there too. I mean, just since you heard them, it might help you looking back at them and kind of give you again, that perspective of how to
do it. Yeah, and hey, write into the podcast and let us know if you either have any insights of your own doing this with a different set of verses, or if you keep looking at the ones that we picked. Let us know if you find anything that spoke to you and that didn't speak to us.
Excellent.
Today.
Thanks for that, because I've been trying to give the email address a little bit more frequently, and that is faithconvo@gmail.com. Faith, C-O-N-V-O, short for conversation. faithconvo@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. Thanks, John.
I want to hear from you, because not only are my mom and I having a faith conversation, but we want to have a faith conversation with you.
Well, look at you.
I'm not just saying that either.
I love that. I didn't read any emails today, but I'm getting more and more emails to the podcast, which is so exciting. And I have to say that in large part is thanks to you sharing the podcast on your homepage on Facebook. The more you share it and let others know about it, the more people have the opportunity of listening and checking it out and connecting via email with us here as well. So I'll be reading more emails in the days to come. Thanks so much, John. Thanks for being here on the podcast today.
Sure thing. Right. It was fun.
That's it for Faith Conversations.